You're listening to Community Radio, CKMS, Radio Waterloo, 102.7, 946 on the Rogers Digital Network.
Happy Monday, Waterloo Region. This is CKMS Community Connections. I'm Bob Jonkman. Welcome to November. I'm going to start off with a bit of Paragon Cause, their new album, and then we'll see what is in the studio for the rest of the hour. Paragon Cause.
who decides? Who decides? It ain't me who decides. Who decides? It ain't me.
In the studio, we have J.P. Mortier. Welcome.
Hey, hi there.
Good to have you in here.
Hey, thank you.
A little dicey going there at the beginning. I hear you had some traffic.
Oh, yeah. Well, I had to go through Toronto, so from 7 to, about 3 and almost almost 3.5 hours.
Right. I'm glad I don't have to do that. I took local transit in. I got to sit in the train and, you know, just drink coffee and chat with people.
So, good. Yeah. Good for
you. Where do you come from?
Okay, well, I live in Montreal. I grew up there, but I was actually born in France.
Oh.
My dad is French. My mother is French of Italian origin. And we came to Canada when I was 2 years old and grew up in Montreal. Before that, actually, my first 2 years, I spent them in Tunisia. And that's it. So,
world traveler.
Yeah, right off the bat. Yeah,
that's excellent.
I did a lot of traveling later on, too. But
yeah? Where have you been?
About 40, 50 countries. I did the teaching English in Japan, among other things. So I've been that area, China twice, Russia, Thailand, Australia, South America, South Africa, so on.
Wow.
All over Europe.
And were you playing when you were out there?
Yeah, actually, well, I... Pretty much, I would say Japan was kind of like the turning point to my playing because I started busking in Tokyo. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I was kind of getting the lyrics and the music started to gel together at that time, basically.
Okay. And so you're in the music business fairly recently.
No, I've I would say it's about 20 years now. I started as a sound engineer. I did a course for recording engineer at what's now called Recording Arts Canada. And they had a, in north of Montreal, in Saint-Sauveur, actually. Saint-Anne-des-Lacs, to be more precise. So I did the course there, and I got some jobs almost right away doing voiceovers. And adding, you know, sound effects and cleaning up audio tracks, stuff like that. Right. And that's when I started doing my demos for the first album, which came out 2004.
So 2004 is the first reasonably one. Recent.
Well, that's, I suppose,
reasonably years, recent. Yeah, so it's, I figured that, you know, somebody gets their start in the music business pretty much, you know, out of high school, out of university, and, you know, builds a career from there, but...
I'm a late bloomer kind of guy, so that's might as well take the time to do it right, I suppose.
Well, exactly, exactly. So, but I mean, you've had some success. You've got 5 albums?
Six, actually.
Six.
So Nation of Iron is number 6.
Oh, wow.
So, well, success is very, it's very relative, right? So I think it's, I've actually built up with every album. The production, I think, is very... I think the strong suit is the production side. But what's difficult is after the promotion and then, you know, obviously getting the attention, getting the space on social media, on the internet, on traditional media as well.
That's the business of the music business.
That's the difficult part.
So did you have an in as a recording engineer? You knew all the right people.
Yeah, well, that's true. I think between me and my co-producer, and my co-producer is Bill Shavlosky, who's worked with a lot of people, so he's a veteran, and he knows what he's doing, this guy. He worked with, going back to the 70s, he worked with a lot of bands from Quebec, and he worked with Frank Marino, Mahogany Rush, did all the albums with Corbeau, Marjo, did April Wine, and then later on, he worked with Robbie Robertson, he worked with Billy Idol, well, so he's got a long resume.
So was there the danger of you being pegged as a recording engineer rather than a musician?
I don't think so. Any recognition is fine for me. Whether people think I'm a good artist or engineer, the idea is that's not really the point.
It didn't obstruct your entry into the music playing business?
Not at all.
No. So you've been on tour. You've just come back from a tour.
I'm actually finishing this leg of the tour tomorrow in Toronto.
Yeah.
So yeah, I went out west first. I do get some airplay from community and university radios out west. So I went there first, and so I just came back from there. It was pretty tiring, actually, so because it was all done within 5 weeks. I had like about 20 shows and about a dozen in BC. And kind of just got back a few days ago. I went had to go back to Montreal for some business and before doing the Toronto show. But I will have other shows in the new year. I hope to come to do more like this area, Southern Ontario,
For sure. Come to Waterloo, please.
Absolutely. And also, I haven't played Ottawa yet, actually, and Maritimes. Yeah. So so that's going to be the plans in 2020.
That's excellent. And so this is not your first tour either. You've had a few
I've toured with, I haven't toured after the first album. I toured after every album after that. So this is actually my fifth Canadian tour.
Ah, good.
I play, I don't play big places. I play cafes, pubs, little music venues, clubs, and
intimate settings.
Intimate settings, yeah, because I have a band, and my band, I basically, well, I'm a solo guy, but I hire my musicians.
Right.
So if I to go to Western Canada, I would just be, I wouldn't make enough money to justify them. And also, like my bassist, he's pretty much in demand. So he's got like 10 other projects going on at the same time. So
who's in your band?
So on drums, I've got Daniel Grégoire. He was in a metal band in the 80s called Death Dealer. And he's done all sorts of stuff. He's got a lot of tribute bands, like an Elvis tribute band. So he's got a quite varied range of musical styles.
Okay.
The bassist is Sylvain Auclair, and he's... he's a wonderful musician. He's a great guy, and he's fun to work with, and he's as talented as he's a nice person. He also plays a Chapman stick.
I saw that on the liner notes.
He actually plays on this album. He only plays on one song on his stick, but on my previous albums, on the second, third album especially, it's all stick.
Really?
Instead of bass. Yeah. So I kind of like that. So. But he's reverted more to bass, actually, because of his other projects as well.
Right.
And so...
this is electric bass.
It's electric bass, yeah. So he's got a band called Carcius, which is a prog band.
Okay.
And another one called Heaven's Cry, which is a bit more metal. And they have a following in Japan and other places, too. And so I got to fight for his attention.
On the campus community circuit, too?
I have no idea where he promotes himself, though.
Can't say I've seen anything by him come through on our office line. We've got office at radiowaterloo.ca, which is our email address for music submissions. So if any other musicians are out there
I will definitely pass the word along to Sylvain. So those are two guys they've been on my last five albums.
Okay.
So they've been pretty regular. Also on the album, I have a few guests. So I have Stéphane Pelletier on acoustic guitar on four songs, and he does electric on another one. And he used to be my guitar teacher back a long, 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 long time ago.
What does he think of all this?
Oh, it's great. I think he's happy that he has at least one student doing something. but he's a fantastic guitarist. And I've been trying to get on his case. You got to put an album out. You got to record some of your stuff because it's amazing. And he's got technique. His style is more Latin jazz, a bit like Paco de Lucia or Al Di Meola, that kind of stuff. And he's got the technique to match, which is wonderful.
A good teacher.
Yeah, on top of that.
Yeah.
So anyways, I'm hoping that sometime soon there'll be something from him.
Yeah. Nation of Iron has a nice, rich sound to it.
So, thank you.
It's good.
Who else do we have? Well, we've got also Sienna Dallin. She's a jazz vocalist. She's originally from Vancouver. She was in Montreal. She lived in Toronto for a little while, and now she's back in north of Montreal. And she's a fantastic jazz singer and pianist, and she does back vocals on three songs. And I also have Beth McKenna on saxophone on four songs. Oh. And she's one of the up-and-coming jazz musicians in this country.
Excellent. Got a large jazz following here in Waterloo, so send her our way.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, absolutely. She teaches at McGill, too, or she's involved with a lot of stuff at McGill University.
Okay. So good lineup, good band, good tour? Successful?
Yeah.
How do you measure success?
There's couple of different ways. Sometimes it's more like depending on the crowd. Like if I play a pub, for example, I played in Regina and it was a very good turnout and that was a very good show because the people got into it. Yeah. But sometimes you play resto bars kind of stuff and people don't necessarily listen to you that
Your
much.
Background.
So even though sometimes those gigs pay more, at the same time they're not as fulfilling in a way.
Not satisfying because nobody's really there for the music.
Exactly. Yeah. I've also played a couple of really, really fun venues on this tour. One in Creston, BC, called The Venue. Yeah. There's a guy called Rick Brown who actually started this. And it's very, very nice. It used to be a small little church. Uh-huh. And he redid all the interior, built it up himself.
He's
still building it. The acoustics are very nice. And instead of having seats, it's just like sofas. So it's got a very cozy interior kind of thing. Okay. And it's a small town, too. So it's like, it's a small town, but people like music. Yeah. And I thought that was a great venue. That was the best venue I played on this tour.
I realize that. My father-in-law used to play country music.
Oh, yeah.
He's passed on now. But he traveled from small town to small town, playing in restaurants, bars, worked his day job and then traveled hundreds of kilometers in the evening to go out to play someplace. And that was what he wanted to do.
The day job
was just to be able to buy the gas to go to the venues and play music.
Yeah. And some cafes. And it's been kind of there's a big variety of venues that I end up playing.
Yeah, and that's with the usually by yourself.
Well, when I'm far away, yeah, it's by myself. So it's solo acoustic, just acoustic guitar, voice, and with a band, it's usually in and around Montreal. We've performed in Ottawa. Ottawa's the farthest. I'm sure that at one point I'll get them to play in Toronto at one point.
That'd be the whole band. That'd be good. Yeah.
That'd be good. Yeah.
So you're planning another tour in the near future.
Yeah, so I'm gonna continue promoting this album. So in the new year, I'm looking into, Quebec, Southern Ontario, and Maritimes, basically.
What was the catcher for the shows? What was the song that you performed there that got the best attention?
Wow, it's funny because I get people like different songs, and This is a double album, too, there's 24 of them.
Got lots of music.
I've actually played each song at least once, and it's hard to say which one people are. So some people, I really like American. Some people say, I like Sons of Steel or Who Decides or World of Steel. So it's like, I find sometimes weird the feedback from some people, too.
If you had to play one song to encapsulate the album, what would you play?
Well, I would play World of Steel. I think this is a song that, it was good from the get-go, but it became something else during the recording stage.
Okay.
And on this song, I have everybody pitching in. So I have all the people I've mentioned.
Yeah.
And Beth does an excellent saxophone solo in the middle of it. And I think it's got something that it's beyond description, I think. So I would go for that one.
Can you play that for us?
Let's play that one.
Let's go do that.
So you'll have to imagine the saxophone solo, but I got...
We can do a little bit of comparative musicology. And,
so it's World of Steel, not Sons of Steel.
World of Steel.
Because that's something that obsessed my drummer quite a bit. Why did you have to name similar titles like that? And
go for it. Thank you.
My world, my world, my world is a world of steel, steel. My world, my world, my world is a world of orders. These laws, these rules, all of this justice, justice. So authority sends you to the shelters and out to the hospice. Throw in the towel right into the ring. I'm lucky, I'm lucky, I'm the right gender. Oh, I'm lucky, lucky, I'm lucky, I'm the right color. I don't want it now. This world's just too heavy. Ties have broken down, too much cost being levied. Why can't this be the home of the brave? Equality and security is not what it ought to be. If two out of three vote for a fool, is this democracy? Why can't this be the land of the free? Can be free, my sister can be free, my children can be free, then I am not free. Just one man isn't free, one woman's not free, just one child isn't free. Then we are not free, we are not free. We are not free. We are not free. We are not free.
That's J.P. Mortier, World of Steel, live in the studio, CKMS FM 102.7, Radio Waterloo. Thanks, J.P.
Thank you.
That hits all the social justice issues that...
In one tune.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, yeah, this is, you know, I think that what I wanted to say in this song is I'm a white male, and I guess I'm on the top of the of the food chain in one way. But I don't, you know, it's not good, you know. I mean, everybody has rights. Everybody has a right to prosper and lead a good life, no matter what color of skin, your gender, your political allegiances, your orientation. I mean, all of this. So I kind of, this song just became kind of like, okay, here's, we don't need all of this. But I think it's optimistic too, in the sense that I think that I've lived long enough to see that there's actually been a progression, because we were not aware of a lot of stuff years ago. I remember as a kid, and I didn't know anything about, you know, about schools where First Nations were separated from their family, that kind of stuff. Schools. I mean, that was not talked about. That really came into the forefront in the past 15, 20 years or so. Yeah. People just did not know about stuff like that. But now we're aware of this. We're aware of that people have rights. We're aware that is, you know, we can do better.
Yeah.
And I think that that's really, we have come a long way. There's still a long way to go, but we've, so kind of like, it's kind of like a middle of the road kind of song.
This is coming up from the people, the citizens.
Absolutely. You
know, I don't think it's reached the levels of politicians and government yet.
Well, I think there's an opening for sure. You know, I think that, you know, the fact we have you know, somebody like Mr. Singh as leader of the NDP, you know, and I think, you know, somebody from a minority who's actually a leader, you know, we have, whether you like Justin Trudeau or not, he has actually brought as many women into this cabinet.
Yes.
And so there are some things, it's not nowhere near perfect. It's nowhere near it should be. But there are little baby steps along the way, and they've appeared. So who knows? Maybe 20 years from now, it will finally reach that upper echelon of society.
Seems to me that there's a lot of appearance, a lot of optics that are being catered to.
Yeah, well, for sure.
There's very little substance in the policies.
I totally agree with you. Yeah. And so that's why there's still a long way to go.
Yeah. And it comes from people like you, you know, delivering the message, in your case, through music.
Well, it's one of the roles of the artist is to bring this kind of stuff to the forefront. And
I've heard it said that the sign of good art is if it's controversial. You know, if people talk about it, then you know, you've been
a successful artist.
The whole album is takes you back to the days of protest songs.
A lot of these songs are not. There's a lot of old songs on this album too. It's songs I've written like 20 years ago.
Oh, really?
And
it's all fresh to me.
It's all fresh to everybody else, but to me. But the way I work actually is that I'm a prolific writer, and I started writing around 1986. So I have
long before you were performing publicly.
Long before I even had a chance to record, right? So I've got like binders full of songs.
Yes.
And
seems to be a common thing with musicians.
And when I first did the first album, I kind of divided songs into different themes a bit, because I didn't want to go schizo on different albums, right?
Right.
So my first album were all songs that I wrote when I was in Japan or about that period of time. The second album was more traveling songs. And the fourth album was soundtrack to a musical theater production.
Oh.
So that was written with Alain Merseca, a playwright from Montreal. The previous album was all love songs and kind of, it's called Songs of Love and Despair.
That would be this one here.
That would be that one there, yeah.
You just stick that on the camera with a big
heart on it.
Yeah.
And
Songs of Love and Despair.
So all inspirations from previous adventures and misadventures, or not just by me, but also.
Yeah.
People around, and this one is the social political one, and I had a lot of stuff on that one.
Yeah. It struck home with me. I like it.
Thank you.
Has the imagery of steel and iron
I think it kind of...
In the song titles, at any rate.
Well, you know, we live in a harsh reality, too, so I think the steel, iron, you know, and I'm trying to... There's some hard topics that I'm addressing, so
yeah.
I figured I'd kind of have the imagery necessary.
Right. So, the title of the album is Nation of Iron.
Nation of Iron, yeah.
Can you play that?
Okay.
JP's tuning up with a capo. And
well, that one is same fret as World of Steel. Okay. So a little bit about that song. What can I say about it? Well, it's kind of a call to arms, I suppose, in some ways. Here we go.
Salute the flags of you, stand by your nation. Mr. Boots, salute the rags of you, stand by your nation. Dictatorship will censor you, so no one can hear you. Democracy will let you talk, but no one listens to you. Stand by your nation. Stand by your nation. What's your union? What's your family? What's your affiliation? What's your union? Who's your company? Show identification. Whose laws you must abide? Propaganda blind you with patriotic pride to fulfill their agendas. Stand by your nation. Stand by your nation. Victim of conscription, bend you with the afterlife, to bend you to religion. Remember you are who you vote. Every poison has its antidote. No such thing as revolution. It's all been evolution. Stand by your nation. Stand by your nation. Nation of iron in a world of steel. Stand by your nation. Time to storm the Bastille. Stand by your nation. Stand by your nation.
Nation of Iron by J.P. Mortier, live, on air, in studio, CKMS FM 102.7, Radio Waterloo. This is CKMS Community Connections. I'm Bob Jonkman. In the studio, we have J.P. Mortier from Montreal, doing a wonderful job of a live concert. That was an exhausting tune.
It is, actually. Especially after driving all this time. Yeah. It's just like... Okay, got to warm up the voice a bit on this one, too.
That's about as different from World of Steel as you can possibly get.
Yeah, well, that's the idea. I like different dynamism. Excuse me, a bit of a tongue twister there. I like different dynamics in songs and on albums, too, which is why also on my albums, every album of mine has at least a few instrumentals on it, because I find that it also, it's a little bit like a... kind of an interlude in between some songs, you know, especially when you're such, you know.
If you're paying attention to the lyrics, It is heavy.
Exactly. And I think that, especially a double album, I don't, I'm not sure if people want to hear my voice for like 2 hours. So I figure, let's. And I enjoy instrumental music quite a bit.
It gives a bit of a punctuated relief for the rest of it. Tell me about double albums.
Double albums. Why this is a double album?
Why is this a double album? You've got a wonderful blog post on your website, jpmorgan.com.
Yes, that's right.
About
that's right. Thanks for reading it. I always was fascinated by. Well, I grew up listening to Zeppelin, the Beatles, and then Pink Floyd, and, and so on. And they all came out with double albums at one point in their career. And I those are wonderful double albums, right? And along the way, I figure, you know what? This could be a really good double album. I have plenty of tracks. It's a very broad subject. I talk about society, different aspects, technology, discrimination. And there's so many things that, I got the songs. And I, more importantly, I have enough quality songs. I didn't want to do a double album for the sake of doing a double album.
No.
So they had to be like, the second to last song has to be as good as the first song, or otherwise there's no point recording it. So I said, okay, let's go ahead with it. And I did have my doubts too at one point was, are people going to be interested in listening to all of this stuff? Or is it even, in 2019, is it even feasible to actually do that? Because that's pretty much against the grain. I think we're going back to more people just downloading a song or two or something like that, rather than whole album stuff. So, but as the project came along, as we worked on it, and we worked pretty much 3 years on the album, and as it came on, I said, no, this is a double album. We even thought about splitting it into two albums, right?
Two separate.
Yeah, a bit releases. Use Your Illusion 1 and 2 or kind of something like that. But, it's going to have, people are going to remember that, it's a double album. There's not too many of those. I think it'll stand out.
No, really, it's just a constraint on the medium, right? That's, you've got, 56 minutes of music you can squeeze onto a CD, something in that neighborhood there?
Well, I think it's more, like 74, 76.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I think you're right. The size of the CD was based on some Beethoven composition that they had to get onto the one side.
Yeah. There's also, I even wasn't sure even to put it out on CD. What should I put it out on? What format? As it turns out, and from my tour just now, people still buy the CDs. Yeah. So, because I made also download cards, and I've still sold a lot more CDs than the downloads.
So I first heard your music when you sent me a link to a digital copy of it. So I downloaded that,
stuck
it in our digital music library, played it for one of the shows. It's much more convenient for me to have digital music than to actually deal with a CD.
I could totally understand.
Here in the studio, we have two of them. One you sent to me, one you sent to the studio. So we've got two copies of it, which means that we have a copy to give away. So,
great.
We'll be handing that out to somebody.
Super.
Yeah. But if you're putting your music on, say, a thumb drive,
a big thumb drive. You've thought seriously about that one, because I have a buddy of mine who's a professional busker, where he finds it a lot more convenient to sell just the drives, right?
Yeah.
Because CDs break, and especially the guy's busking.
Yeah.
So he's traveling around quite a bit. So I thought he likes better to sell the drives. But he told me it was still 50-50. People still wanted the CDs.
Well, the biggest problem that CDs have brought to me is that the liner notes are
so small.
So small.
Yeah.
You either have to have a booklet inside the case.
I would love that. Maybe one day, if I get popular enough to re-release the stuff on vinyl, that'd be super. That it would have... I would have to get a hit or something like that for me to do it.
What about the acoustic quality there? You know, the vinyl sounds nice and warm because of distortions and inadequacies in being able to transmit a full spectrum of sound.
Absolutely. So, I don't know. I still have, at home, I have 1,000 vinyls.
Oh, man.
And I still buy vinyls occasionally.
It's all come back, hasn't it?
It is.
You have a show on here.
For me, it actually never really left because even at... at when it was the least popular, you know, like late '90s to early 2000s. I hooked up with some DJs that were doing a lot of, you know, doing a lot of raves and stuff like that. So for me, it never really left. But okay. I know that for the public out there, it is. Yeah. Everybody thought the vinyl had gone the way of the dodo, but
yeah. And cassettes, you know, we've got
and cassettes are coming back.
Got a production company yeah. right here yeah. in Waterloo. One of our online DJs, Tuesday evenings, Francis Clare on the air, runs the Three Nines distribution network, which is all cassettes. You know? So
who knows?
He plays cassettes.
20 years, we'll be listening to Wax Cylinders.
I don't think those will have the durability of even vinyl. As a recording engineer,
yeah.
How do you find the quality of a CD compared to vinyl, compared to something that you might distribute digitally?
Oh, I had that test with my bassist Sylvain too, because we did a taste test. We took Miles Davis Kind of Blue.
Oh yeah.
So we had a recent vinyl too, because he had bought a vinyl, a new one, and we compared it to a CD. Also of a recent master also.
Mm-hmm.
And our conclusion was that one was not necessarily better than the other, but they both sounded different.
So would you write music tuned to the medium?
I think not. I think I'm more interested in writing a good song, no matter what it's on. And it's a good song also, you've got to be able to play it live.
Yes,
you also got to be able to, it's got to sound good in your car, got to sound good in your headphones.
And it's always going to sound different when you're playing it live.
It's going to sound different. Yeah. People have different sound systems. And there's no point in even worrying about it too
much. So what would be a pronounced difference between something you're playing live and something that's on the album? What would be the most significant?
I just played Nation of Iron, which I think sounds very different than on the album.
Okay.
But I kind of wrote it, basically when I do acoustic versions, they mm-hmm. kind of go back to their primitive form when I first wrote it, because
okay.
I pretty much write everything on the acoustic guitar. Once in a while, I'll like Sons of Steel, the first album,
mm-hmm. yeah.
I actually wrote on a bass, so it's actually a bass. Bass line.
So that explains how it opens. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Okay. And then so Sylvain actually plays it. But when I first wrote it, I was fooling around with my. I have a Rickenbacker 4001 bass, so I was fooling around with that, and that tune kind of popped up that way.
Yeah.
But the majority of my songs come from the acoustic guitar, so a lot of the songs, even though they might have all sorts of arrangements and all sorts of added stuff on it, I can still play them with just a guitar and vocal.
Right, because that's how they started.
That's how they started.
Right.
They just revert to that,
right.
basically.
Right.
So, but I would... One thing that we've discussed with my co-producer is to kind of, now that I have 6 albums, maybe at one point kind of revisit some of the old songs and actually record them acoustically.
Okay.
So that's one of the possibilities. We have a few...
Keep Mortier unplugged.
And it would kind of be a good representation when I go on tour far away
right.
where I can't bring the band.
Right.
So I can, you know... So somebody also had suggested me that years ago to do that. And I haven't done it yet, but that's one of the possibilities.
Is there a surprise when you come to a venue, people show up and there's just you with an acoustic guitar when they've been listening to the
So far nobody
sound.
Has complained about it. So but I do explain, you know, when I address the crowd at one point, I do mention I have albums for sale and they're full band arrangements. So I do mention that.
Yeah. Okay.
And I do mention it when I send it to the radio stations as well, is that let's say, for example, in Winnipeg. Winnipeg's been pretty good for me because the University of Manitoba, I've always gotten interviews there and all that.
Uh-huh.
And but by now they know me, so good. I don't need to warn them that I'm just coming with just the acoustic
right.
stuff.
Yeah.
But the ones that don't know me, I always mention it in the one sheet.
When
bios.
I invited you here, I told you about, you know, we've got enough electrical outlets for a couple of instrument amps, but, you know, probably not enough room for a drum kit in the studio. And here you are by yourself, and there's not a problem at all.
Yeah,
that's good.
Yeah.
So let's do that comparison we talked about.
You know, okay.
We'll play a track off the album,
mm-hmm.
And then you play that track acoustically, or maybe the other way around. How would you like to do it?
Hmm.
And what would you choose?
Well, it's your show. It's your call.
Okay. Play me something that...
would be very different.
That would be very different and may change the perception of the meaning, you know, how the meaning might change, where the instrumentation is important to carrying the message.
All right. Okay, well, we could go for Sons of Steel, I suppose.
Okay.
And so, like I told you, I wrote this one on a bass. Yeah. So that makes it very even tougher on the acoustic guitar.
Play it on acoustic, right. And then we'll listen to the opening of it on the CD.
The entire song or just the
play the entire song here, yeah.
Right. Lie to me, lie to you. Statistics are false or untrue. Follow you, follow me. To be slaves to technology. That you need, Sons of Steel, provide you content. What's a purpose? You know their intent. Stress and talk to the world on your laptops and phones. Conversation that keeps you alone.
What you read, this data is all that you need.
Sons of Steel by J.P. Mortier. The acoustic version in studio and the recording from the album Nation of Iron. Welcome again, J.P. Yes,
thank you.
We're almost done here, so you have one day left. You have one day of touring left.
Yeah, so yeah. Toronto tomorrow at Transact Club. It's 292 Brunswick Avenue, if there's people in Toronto listen to this.
Yeah.
It's at 7:30, and there's a suggested donation, $5, if you want to give more, by all means. The price of gas is...
And you're selling your CDs?
And I'm selling my CDs, also downloadable cards. And I also had T-shirts for sale, but only got a couple left, actually.
Okay.
And there's a couple that I unfortunately left behind in Crest and BC that I asked the guy to mail them back to me. Cause
so if you want the swag, you've got to go see JP tonight, or tomorrow night, Tuesday.
Tomorrow night, yeah.
Yeah, at Transact Club.
Yeah.
Yeah. We broadcast on the internet, so radiowaterloo.ca/listen. It's entirely possible you'll pick up a few fans on the way. And
that'd be great.
Yeah, it'd be wonderful. We're talking about distributing your music, and you said you weren't too concerned about people making a copy and sending it to their friends and sharing.
Well, you know, people listen without even downloading, right? I mean, you got access with your phone or laptop, whatever. You got access to the history of music, basically. You know, if you want to listen to Blind Lemon Jefferson or Peter Tosh or Rachmaninoff, they're all there. If you want to listen to Tibetan folk music, it's there. You know, there's no. I'm not going to lose any sleep over people listening for free, because that's the way it is.
That's right.
I'm not going to spit against the wind.
Is playing music a full-time gig for you?
It's a full-time gig, but I still need a day job to pay the bills. Yeah, so that's the unfortunate.
Yeah, for some reason, music isn't valued. And yet when you ask people, you know, it's a most prominent part of their lives.
It is, yeah. I think there probably is some kind of business model that might end up working eventually.
The distribution of music for money is probably not it. You know, distribute the music.
Yeah, that's for your
there's zero cost for distribution nowadays through the internet.
Yeah,
I mean, you're still pressing CDs and all.
Yeah.
But that's not where I think the money is. I think maybe the tour, the swag.
Yeah, there's that. The only thing about the tour now is that everybody's trying to tour. And there's not that many as many venues, and I've noticed that you actually get less money now, because I think venues can pick whoever they want, and they also, when you're doing original material, you're also behind the eight ball, because a lot of places prefer to cover bands. And
you do any covers?
I once in a while, but only if the mood strikes me. Okay. Let's just say,
okay.
I'm a songwriter, right? That's really what I am. And I put my songs forward. So I don't, I did play one cover tune at the show in Sudbury.
Ah.
So, but it was really.
Doesn't happen much.
That was very much more accidental.
Yeah. So you've got some instrumental music?
Yes, I do.
Something you can take us out with?
Sure. So I'll
talk over this. So, you know, this is not going to be.
Okay. All right. So I'll play 147, which is also on.
All right. You listen to... Oh, go ahead.
Okay. Oh, I was just going to say playing the right notes would probably help.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's 147.
You've been listening to J.P. Mortier live on air in studio at CKMS FM 102.7 Radio Waterloo. This is CKMS Community Connections. My name is Bob Jonkman. CKMS Community Connections is sponsored by Radio Waterloo. And the executive producer is Yenny Strong. You can hear Yenny on the second half of CKMS Community Connections on Friday at 2 p.m. Listen to J.P. Mortier playing 147 at the top of the hour.